Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast, where we interview business owners, leaders, or marketing professionals to find out their lessons and stories for success.
Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast. It's been a while since I've done one of these, but we are back and we have a fabulous guest with us today. But before we jump into that, a little bit about us. I am Simon Dell. I am the CEO of CMO. That is CMO.com, CEMOH.com. We are the marketplace for marketing people. We basically hire marketing people out by the day, whether you need a social media coordinator, a marketing strategist, graphic designer, whatever you need, we have them. Come and have a talk to me. I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook, all sorts of other places that you can find me. And if you get a chance after this, please go and like and rate our podcast as well on iTunes and wherever you happen to be listening to it. Our guest today is the CEO, or the former CEO, but also founder of Circonomy. She's decided after divorcing that she's going to only have one name now. It's a very easy name with three letters. Welcome to the show, Yaz. How are you?
I'm great, Simon. Thank you for having me.
Give us the elevator pitch for Circonomy. Tell us what it's all about.
Well, Circonomy is all about a world where nothing useful goes to waste, including human potential. We're throwing away the take, make, waste economy, and we're making sure that products and services sit in the economy for longer life. And you think reuse, repair, repurpose, remanufacture, and ultimately re-commerce. And we work with retailers and big businesses across Australia and some globally to ensure that we're diverting products from an idle or dormant state and putting it back into the economy. My favourite way to say what we do is actually really short. We take the surprise chain and we turn it into the supply chain.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. So it's the surprise chain into the supply chain.
Yeah.
So explain explain the surprise chain to me.
Well, I remember being at our warehouse once and we would have trucks turn up at our warehouse back when we were called the world's biggest garage sale. That's how we started 5 years ago or 9 years ago as a concept. But the trucks would turn up and I remember one of my team members rolling their eyes and not in a bad way, just in a, oh my gosh, another truck. And I just out of the blue said, like most founders come up with something new. And I said, look guys, this is the time to get really excited. It's like Christmas. Think of it as the surprise chain. We don't know what's on the truck. We have no manifest, no inventory, no data. But products were going to turn up at our garage sale, basically. And it was our job to understand how we could make them more useful in the economy so that they could make an impact, make a difference, and ultimately make money.
Okay. Right. I get it. So how do you guys make money then? That's a nice segue into that. What's the business model that you guys operate on?
Yeah, look, we have a number of ways that in how the business model has become scalable. And over the years, it's evolved significantly from your old garage sale style to a very proactive and purposeful Circonomy design or circular economy designed strategy. And it's ultimately, we sell products. That's one way we make money. And these products are generally slightly imperfect, or maybe the boxes are not quite right, or maybe they're an end-of-line product and they're sitting idle in business warehouses across the country. So our job is we actually rescue those products and put them back into the economy, and that's how we make money. We also provide services including waste audits, data analytics, information about the second-hand or the previously known as the second-hand economy, but the circular economy and longevity of life cycles of products. And we also do some incredible proactive work with some of the biggest organizations in Australia in ensuring that we solve problems that no one else is yet to solve. So you imagine moving out of your office, and most organizations do a really quick defit, turn a building back into, you know, leasable for the next client. And often in those defits, the speed of just getting rid of the stuff in the office is the priority. And of course, we just can't continue to do that. It's not sustainable. So our business actually works with our clients to ensure that those products not only get placed back in the economy, and this is one of the services that we offer, is we also make sure that the data information and the climate value piece is captured so that it's not sustainability washing, greenwashing. We're actually very action oriented. As a founder in a startup that's now scaling up, it's our propensity to execute is one of our biggest superpowers. So we say yes to things that most people don't believe are possible, and we work with our clients in a service-based model to do that with them, so it's unique to their needs.
You mentioned you were originally the world's biggest garage sale. I want to touch on where that idea originally came from. Was that sort of something that had been brewing in that Yaz's head for years, or was it that sort of a light bulb moment that you just went, let's do this?
It's probably a little bit of both. I remember, you know, growing up as a kid, not having a lot of things. And then you become an adult and, you know, you work your life away. And there's a saying, it's not my quote, but people buy things they don't need with money they don't have to impress people they don't like. And we all accumulate all these assets and then we don't use them and they sit idle. In Australia alone, there's $46 billion worth of stuff in our homes that we don't use and we're not selling. And so I was a triathlete at the time back in 2013, so we're talking 10 years ago now. And I remember needing to and wanting to raise money for charity, but I was baking cupcakes and people were kind of rolling their eyes at the $5 cupcakes I was trying to sell every training session. And I thought to myself, the original idea came from the question I asked, which was, how do you make money in charitable terms? So how do I raise money without asking people for money? Because there are 55,000 charities in Australia, everybody's doing something that's important, and there's a big competitive friction there. And we just can't always give. So I thought, oh my gosh, I have like thousands of dollars worth of stuff I'm not using in my home. I'm going to have a garage sale. And in true Yaz style, of course, I called it the world's biggest garage sale. And Simon, you'll love this bit. I created the Facebook page, the Twitter, the Insta. I took all the names, created the domain. It wasn't a business, but I just really wanted to create a brand behind it so that I had an ability to have a home for people to understand what it is that we were doing. And then, long story short, all my friends and family gave me all their stuff from their garages. And all of a sudden, I found myself working outside of business hours because I had a job at the time and just accumulating product data and information from people as to why they were giving us this high quality stuff that they could have sold on platforms if they wanted. What I identified at the time is what I called dormant goods. So it was the stuff that, and I'm using my customer terms that I learned from talking to people, the stuff that we thought was too good for charity bins, so we didn't give it away to the existing charity networks, and we also didn't have time to sell it. So time poor, asset rich, you know, quality product that was just being then mobilized and visualized. So the community gave big, and we sold $15,000 at our first ever garage sale in 2013. And then literally for the next few years, I just did it as a volunteer thing. I pull it together every year. And by the third event, it was almost $100,000 in revenue in a single day. So I thought, wow. Shit, I better quit my job and actually do this properly, because I enjoyed it more than I enjoyed what I was doing, because I could see it was making such a difference in the world.
Let's go back to that very first event. I mean, you know, you're clearly driven, you're clearly very tenacious in terms of wanting to achieve your goals and your objectives and things like that. But, you know, events are hard. Everyone knows that. Anyone who's been involved in events. Events are hard to operate, manage, run, and most importantly, get people to them. So, you know, you've planned out this first event. How do you get people through the door?
Great question. So my home at the time was in Kedron, and I couldn't actually have my garage sale at the garage anymore because it was too full.
Right.
So I ended up needing to move all the stuff to a local hall. So in true tenacious style, I suppose you could say, so I picked up the phone, spoke to the local hall, managed to get it for free. I talked to my friends, convinced them they should bake cupcakes so we could make more money. And I rang Mini Movers at the time, and I just pitched them. I said, I need two trucks. I can't take 30 ute loads down to the wet. Like the hall was only a few hundred meters from my house, but I just knew time-wise it wasn't going to be efficient. If I had just taken ute loads, I would have burnt all my friends out by loading up utes. So we got a couple of Mini Movers trucks that picked up all the goods from my house, and we set up the garage sale the night before the event. How did we get people there? I mean, Facebook event. I remember creating a Facebook event back in the early days of Facebook events. And do you know what I actually did? My first ever job, I was a pizza delivery driver for Silvio's.
I was going to get to that later on, yep. Yeah.
So I'll
had questions
back to
about
it.
That. Yeah.
But I was a great driver, right? And I loved it. And I loved it so much, I ended up being a manager of a store. And I remember our most successful sales events to mobilize customers was when we would letterbox drop. So what do you think I did? I letterbox dropped the streets of Kedron, Chermside, and all the surrounds. I went and spoke to all the schools. basically sent every friend and family member a PDF copy, told them that they had to distribute it to all their friends, and it was all just word of mouth and a little bit of digital. I mean, we didn't spend any money on advertising. I got on a radio station a couple of times and spruiked it there, and we ended up having, and of course I love data, like I'm super data nerdy, so we had 500 people through the doors with a little door counter. We raised 15 grand. We knew that they were good numbers. Wow. And it was great revenue, and we gave all the money away to charity, of course. So it was so much fun. And I still remember some of the lessons from that day of just listening to customers and hearing what they were saying. And then I would just take all that data and make it the way we would evolve for the next year. And so basically, you know, I locked up shop, gave all the money away, and then 11 months later, I took a month off my job and project managed the next one.
So obviously, you know, that grew and grew. What made you change it from the world's biggest garage sale to Sir Economy? Was it just you felt you could do more and that previous brand had perhaps run its course?
Yeah, it was a little bit of both. I mean, the world's biggest garage sale started out to raise money for charity and give all the money away.
Yeah.
But to quit my job and go all in, I mean, I was the breadwinner in my family. I needed to understand that one day I'd be able to get an income from this and employ people. You didn't want to be drawing on volunteers forever. And I never wanted to be a charity leader. Like, I'm too colourful and maybe intense to run a charity.
Sweary. Sweary, yes.
Bit McSweary as well. But
vulgar. Like, vulgar. What other words can we...
Classy. We say classy. But I'm definitely like fast, right? Fast. I execute, go hard, go fast, yeah. Make change really quick. And charities are just not set up like that. It felt too slow. And so I actually, by the third year, we did almost 100 grand. And I had a customer ask me, you know, will you ever do this full time? Will you ever do more than one a year? Will you ever create jobs? And that was probably when the penny dropped. And I thought, gosh, yes, we should be doing this. Imagine if I could actually do this full time. So I did go overseas for a work-related trip. I went to Infocom in 2017. Okay. And I was at Infocom. But I knew, because I was in the States already, I was in Florida for Infocom, but I knew that there was this garage sale on Bainbridge Island, which is just off Seattle. And they had been running their garage sale for 58 years. And I thought, oh, I'm going to go and learn from them. So I literally signed myself and my whole family up to volunteer for the Bainbridge Island Rotary Auction and Rummage Sale for 2 weeks. And we literally worked 12 hours a day for 2 weeks, nonstop, me, myself, and my husband at the time, my two kids. But what I learned in a population of 24,000 people on an island, that they had very similar to what we had, a garage sale, people would give their stuff away, then you'd sell it, then you'd make money and you'd make impact. They did $579,000 in a single day in 6 hours on an island with 24,000 people. And that was my data point. I thought, this is it. I'm going back to Brisbane. I'm quitting my job. And I literally did quit my job. But let me go back to your question of why I changed it or needed to change it from garage sale. So at the time, the chief entrepreneur of Queensland said to me, you've got a business. Go work out how to make money. This is really viable and valuable as a business. It doesn't matter that you hadn't kept any of the cash, that you'd given it all away to charity. You can find a way to make money. This is a really viable thing. So anyway, I got told about the River City Labs Accelerator, which is a tech accelerator for startup founders to apply for. And I remember applying for it, thinking I was a bit of an imposter because we're not a tech company. There was no tech platform. Everything was glued together with Trello boards, Jira boards, spreadsheets, all the back-end tech that was existing, but not my own proprietary tech. And I'm not a tech person. I'm not a typical founder. I didn't look or sound like other founders. And so pitching my pants off to go into an accelerator that was a tech accelerator that would give me $100,000 of investment to take 6% equity at the time, and that's all public information that's available, I have to admit, I didn't feel like the world's biggest garage sale was a brand name that fit the vision of what I had. So right then and there, it was in 2018, Simon, in May of 2018, that I created Seconomy as a brand, but I couldn't release it because already I was a mid-40-year-old female founder pitching a garage sale with no tech. And, you know, I'm quite forward and at times a bit ferocious, right? So there wasn't really a box I fit into, but yet I had all this revenue and I had all these tens of thousands of customers. And so it didn't matter. I remember Steve Baxter saying, what are you doing in this tech accelerator? You're not a tech company. And I said, no, I'm not, but I have more customers and revenue than any of the other applicants. So I need to be in this accelerator so that I can bring to life the vision. And the vision ultimately is Syconomy, but I can't go and pitch Syconomy because people were still scratching their heads when I was saying we're a circular economy company. They're like, circular what? People were still wondering why I was a social enterprise and saying, why don't you just go make money? Why would you want to be a social enterprise? Go and be commercial, commercial. And we are commercial, but we're commercial with care. And it's a really big, different style of business. So I just thought, stick with the name that's got data related to it, that's known and your customers know it, and worry about not trying to take your customers on the journey of a brand name change just yet, but take your investors, your network, and your partners on the journey by acting like Syconomy, but just not calling yourself Syconomy. And so it was after our most recent capital raise that we launched Syconomy as a brand. And it's the right time now. We were just too early at the time to use it as a brand name.
The question I wanted to ask you next was about founders with personality, right? And I guess what you see, certainly with someone like yourself, and anyone that knows you knows that you are, you know, you're very strong-willed, very big personality. Everyone knows when Yaz has walked into the room, there's, you know, and I don't say that in a negative way at all. That's just how, you know, how you are and how certain other people perceive you. There's been famous founders throughout the years who are, you know, similar to that. There's, you know, there's the Steve Jobses of this world. Those kind of people that when they walk into the room, they kind of have a presence. And you only got to look at Elon Musk now in terms of how he is, in terms of driving his business forward as a personality. How do you address those people whose personality can't carry them that far, who might be founders? Because often those strong personality founders, that's actually part of their marketing. It's an intrinsic part of their marketing that they go out and talk in front of people, that they stand up in front of audiences, that, you know, they make themselves heard in a crowd. How do you think someone without that confidence, you know, how would you coach them to perhaps be a little bit more outgoing? Or is that just simply they shouldn't even bother doing that or shouldn't even try doing that?
Oh, look, I think that's a really great question, actually. And there's a really good book I listened to recently when I transitioned from being CEO to being chief evangelist or whatever else I'm called, right? So founder still. And it's called Rocket Fuel. And it talks about visionaries and integrators. Now, a founder is generally the chief everything officer and needs to be both the integrator and the visionary for a point in time. But a great founder, regardless of their exuberance and energy, needs to also know where they best flow. And so my advice is probably more about understanding who you are, not what you do, and then owning the shit out of that, right? Like, I am energized by going to events. I love people. I want to learn and harvest information and knowledge for continuous growth in whatever I do in my life. It is an addiction. It is who I am. And I learned a long time ago to accept that. And I think it's about self-awareness and self-acceptance first, and then to coach someone through that. I would ask them to go deep. I journal a lot, look, literally sitting on my desk. Stoic journal, 5-minute journal. I'm intense. I'm like super intense, but I'm extremely grounded as well. And it's positively polarizing for people because I'm like the softest hard ass you'll ever meet. I'm both of those things equally. And so, you know, I'm extroverted and introverted, and I'm excellent at compartmentalizing what I need to be the best version of me. And here's what I say, it's one of my little quotes, one of my little Yaz-isms, right? Because when you're a founder and you're like me, and when you're anybody and you're like me, and all my life, people would think, oh my God, she wants me to be like her. Oh my God, hell no, I do not. Do not be like me. The quote is, don't be a B-grade version of me. Be an A-grade version of you. And I think people think they have to be all these things they might see out in the world, but actually they don't need to be any of those things. They need to look in the mirror, write things down, video journal, look at who you are, talk to yourself, let the voice in your head actually come out. just to you. You don't have to audience that to anybody. And then really watch that back and see who you are and then own it unconditionally, regardless of what other people think of you. Because people are going to love you or loathe you regardless. Better to be you and have the right people love you and the wrong people loathe you because you actually don't want them in your orbit anyway. So I would say to the more conservative founders, get comfortable understanding who you are. And if you are the best person to pitch your business, go and pitch it. But go and find mentors and seek training and self-awareness development so that you can invest the most time in yourself. And it will always yield, regardless of the way you project yourself to the world, it will always yield the best momentum and give you the strongest growth. It's actually all on you, and you can't blame other people for it if you're not prepared to own it.
Awesome advice. Thank you. What do you guys use at the moment? What does Circonomy use from a marketing stack at the moment in terms of sending emails and collecting customer information? What are those little pieces of marketing tech data that you guys love?
Yeah, look, when you're a founder, you get all these free products to start with, and that's a really great marketing strategy because then once you've got the products and you're embedded into them, it's really hard to exit them. So we got free HubSpot for years, and it was excellent, and we still use HubSpot to this day. We pay for it now. It's grown our database for a long time, and we do all our email sends through scheduling using HubSpot. We can put all our platforms into HubSpot, and it's actually really simple and easy. It may or may not be the product we use forever. There are other products, and I'm certainly not flying the flag nor endorsed by them to endorse them. But it's a really great startup founder product. It just, I came from, let's say, sales, right? Like, that's not really what it is, because I think sales is a terrible word to describe what I call customer intimacy, not customer service, not customer experience, but customer intimacy. And so, Simon, I'm really about genuinely love in business. And I believe it has a seat at the boardroom table. And I believe I know, and I know it makes people feel uncomfortable, but love in business is a disruptor. And I said it years ago, and I still to this day keep my hand on my heart, no pun intended, and will live by the love factor that business does need to have leaders who are prepared to bring their whole self to the building, like we've seen in evolution. And for me, having tech stacks and data collations that allow you to get intimate with your customer, to not sell them a product, that's not what customer intimacy is. I would never sell anything that I didn't believe in and that I didn't believe my customer needed. So it's about understanding the voice of your customer and really hearing their heartbeat so that you can have the best matchmaking capability with them that you can. And if you're really good at your job and you're really good at customer intimacy, you'll then lead them to the right place if you and your product and service can't give them what they want. And that co-opetition mindset is really a very special way to do business, and it always multiplies outcomes.
Before we finish off, we are going to have to go back and touch on your time as a pizza delivery driver. Yes. I just want to know, like, were you on a moped or in a car? Because just the idea of you driving a moped scares the shit out of me, frankly. But how was that first job for you?
Oh my God, I loved it. And it took me to become an adult to actually understand how valuable that was to me. So the year was 1993, 30 years ago, I was in year 12, and I had a Datsun Sunny. It was red and it was awesome. And I really wanted to earn some money, and the Red Bank Plains, Silvio's Dollar Pizza Store was looking for drivers, and I was the only female driver on the crew. And I've never really seen myself as different, probably because I've always just been really comfortable and confident that I'm as good as anybody else that identifies as any gender around me. And so me and my Datsun Sunny, we were regular on the roster at Silvio's. I gave the best customer service, is what it was called at the time, the best customer service. Answer the phone in 3 rings. Make the pizzas if you're in the store. It didn't matter that you were the driver and you got paid to deliver pizzas. If you were standing around, time to lean, time to clean, you contributed to the overall team. And that really elevated me as a team member and I got noticed by my manager. And how's the irony of this? And this is what I love and didn't know at the time. But Kerry was my, her name was Kerry. She was my first ever manager and I loved her. She was so fierce, confident, competent, driven. I really was very inspired by her. And Kerry actually happened to be Don May's sister. So Kerry May was her name at the time. And Don May's was like the global CEO of Domino's now. And Kerry said to me, Yaz, I really think you should become a store manager. And so instead of going to uni, my mum was not happy at the time. Instead of going to uni or doing any tertiary study, I said, actually, I'm just going to defer my study and I'm going to go and be the manager of the Silvio's Dollar Pizza at Ipswich. I'd never even really been to Ipswich before. And I lived on the fringes, right, of Ipswich. But I went and did that and, oh, my God, I made all the mistakes and screwed up all the things. But I also was trusted by Kerry. And she believed in me to a point where she planted a seed that gave me a self-assurance, not arrogance, a self-assurance that if it's to be, it's up to me. And if I wanted something hard enough, bad enough, or I believed in something that no one else could see, that she would back me. And I can tell you that that was the most life-changing experience I could have ever had. I didn't know it at the time. I would have taken it for granted and not even known that she was as epic as she was or is, but it really did shape me. So I would say to anybody out there that's looking for their first job, or their kids are looking for their first job, or even if you're looking for something better than what you're doing right now, don't, like, this is a big thing for me and I know we need to wrap up. Don't get so caught up on the what you do. What you do is irrelevant. Like today I'm Seconomy, I was Silvio's, I was world's biggest garage sale, and once upon a time I was Video Pro. But you know what actually is the consistent thing in all of that is not the what I do, but the who are you. And I think what Kerry helped me do is she helped me understand who I was, because she saw something in me. And I'm so appreciative of that, because I know a lot of people who never discover that in their lifetime. And it is such an unleashing, unlocking, untethered, just unconditional love for the most important person in the world, which is you. So don't ask people what they do anymore. Ask them, who are you? And then go and work with, sit beside, volunteer, you know, brain rape, whoever you need to really be motivated to go and make that difference in your life, regardless of what the title or conditions might be. Because it's about the feeling and energy, not necessarily about the statistics or the data of a certain job description.
You've come to this with some fantastic messages and some fantastic ideas, and I think there's a huge amount of learnings from today, and I really appreciate your time in your busy day. Last question for you. If people want to get hold of you, they want to reach out to you, they want to ask you a question, what's the best way of doing that?
Oh, look, I'm on all the platforms and my profiles are public. I only believe in the real, real Simon. So there's no perfectly prepared, pristine, professional profile of Yaz. This is who I am. Cracks and crevices, flaws and failures. Hit me up on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, anything really. And I manage all my own responses. It's really important to me that the voice of what you hear is the human that is behind who I am. You know, I learned years ago, and you'll appreciate this, is, you know, storytelling is your selling. And for me, when we tell stories authentically with the vulnerability and the essence of who we are, you know, the right people will reach out. And I would absolutely encourage anybody that thinks I can help in some way, or anybody that thinks they can help me in some way. I mean, this is what the circular economy is all about as well, not just about things, but about connections as well.
Awesome. All right, Yaz, thank you very much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. For all of you listening out there, I hope you enjoyed that, and look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks very much.
Thank you.